A force on the Australian airwaves, Avnisha Martins is no stranger to holding a mic. With humble beginnings at her local Gurdwara singing Shabad Kirtan, the Punjabi-Australian artist entered the music scene in 2017 as part of the girl group Mischief. She later transitioned to become a breakfast radio host for Kedar and has now ventured into the podcasting space. A strong believer in what's meant to happen will happen, our guest Avnisha carries faith in consistency and, more importantly, dreaming. Welcome to SBS Spice. This is Suhaila Sharif. From running around her neighbourhood in her auntie avatar to creating Bollywood fusion ballads, Avnisha has charted a unique path. Today, we'll talk to her about the fear of creating content online, the patience required for a breakthrough moment, straddling two worlds, and the constant drive to keep things fresh. I won't spoil the fun by saying any more, so let's jump right in. So, welcome, Avnisha. Now, SBS Spice listeners may recognize Avnisha's voice from the already cancelled podcast with Keenan Yaz, her time at Kedar as breakfast radio host, and also being part of the Aussie girl group Mischief.
Oh my gosh.
Throwback. Avnisha, you've been part of the Australian music industry and the media industry for over 10 years now, but take us back to the start of your story. Who were you before you held the mic?
I feel like the best way to describe myself is I was always a drama kid, in and out. Loved acting, and so I remember, as long as I can remember, I was always doing, you know, watching Bollywood films, watching, you know, Hollywood films, acting, and I was like, I could do that one day. And then, you know, I went to school and I was a drama kid. I was doing plays, theater, all of that good stuff, improv classes, and that was kind of my first taste of, like, you know, creating and being silly and having fun, and I loved it. I was addicted to it. And in parallel, while I was doing that, I was always singing as well. So I feel like I was always holding the mic, and that's thanks to my dad. So as apparently, like, when I was born, he heard me cry and he's like, oh, she's got a very loud cry. She's going to be a singer just like me.
He knew it from the beginning.
Yeah. He, like, predicted my future. But, you know, we sang together all the time, you know, at the Gurdwara. I remember he loved the harmonium, so we'd do Shabad, Kirtan, all that stuff together. And then eventually, like, my dad, he wanted me to perform more because he knew I loved it. And so he started an association called the Canberra Multicultural Artists Association. And I was performing there all the time. We had, like, events and stuff like that. And it was really good because I feel like I was always on stage, you know, if it was not acting, doing theatre, you know, I was singing. And so I just fell in love with it. And that's, like, that's been my whole childhood, just singing and acting and doing all that stuff. And so, yeah, now I'm here doing the exact same thing, like, 20 years on. So.
And don't we love that? Like, you're excelling at every single thing you're doing at the moment, I have to say. But I have to say, it's also refreshing to hear that your dad was quite supportive of you entering the creative arts space. Like, I think what we try to, like, what parents try to box us into is the three main things: lawyer, engineer, doctor.
No, don't get me wrong. They definitely were like, right, well, you know, degree is very important. And, you know, to be fair, like, I understand it. I understand exactly where they were coming from. Like they were always supportive with the music and the acting. But of course, you know, they emphasized the fact that getting a degree, you have to make sure that's your, you know, you have a backup plan always. And I was grateful for it because I learned a lot, and it was also a good learning curve for many reasons. And I also understand, like, because I feel like we can be hard on our parents, but I understand this concept of the digital space and pursuing music and pursuing acting is so foreign to them.
Yeah.
And they just don't understand it. And I get it. Like, if something's so confusing and you just want, their intentions are good. They want to make sure that I was safe, happy, and, you know, could fend for myself in this world, exactly. You know, and so I got it, but I was also that very annoying kid where I just did what I wanted to do. So I was like, I have to do acting, I have to do music.
I mean, it's a phase for many brown kids where they're just kind of like, I'm going to do everything my parents tell me not to. And then, but in that sense, like, you've also figured out what you like and what you don't like.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, I took them on the journey with me. Like, every time, you know, I remember when I decided to quit my job, it was a very good job. And, you know, I was so scared. And, you know, I'm married, and I remember my husband telling me, he's like, you have to believe in yourself. And I was very lucky and fortunate to find a life partner like that. And so he said to me, you know, you have to drop your hours at your work to pursue what you love, but you also have to tell your parents that you're gonna, you know, leave your job. And the day I told my parents that I left my job, I was like sweating. I was so scared. And my mom was like, oh, are you sure? Like, you know, like, think about it. And then honestly, every week after that, she'd call me, and we were very close. And she'd call me and she'd be like, is everything okay with money? Like, you okay? I'm like, I'm fine. Like, I wouldn't make such a drastic life decision if it wasn't, you know, if I wasn't fine. But, you know, they just worry. And I think it's a good thing. I'd rather someone worry for me than they're not, right? Yeah. So,
and as you've mentioned, you have South Asian roots. Your South Asian identity has roots in India. What parts of India is your family from?
So when we go back to India, now I should know where my parents are born, but I always get confused because my whole family is dispersed everywhere in India. Yeah. You know, some live in Chandigarh, some live in New Delhi, Punjab, like everywhere. And so every time we go, we literally travel around because you have to, everyone finds out that you're there, so you have to meet everyone. But I've asked my parents 101 times where they're born, and I forget every single time, so I'm a terrible daughter. But every time we do go, our main place that we do visit, which is my grandparents, they're in New Delhi.
Oh, okay. So. And growing up, were you connected to South Asian roots?
Yeah, like massively. So my mom, my dad, and my brother, they were born in India, and so I was the first one in the family to be born in Australia, in Sydney. And growing up, my parents, Gurdwara, Shabad Kirtan, like I was doing that all the time with my dad, singing, learning the tabla as well. And now I can't play it, but at the time I was like kind of okay. And watching like Bollywood movies, that's kind of where I got a lot of my inspiration for everything. So I kid you not, like Bollywood fanatic. I watched movies 20 times over every weekend, over and over and over again. So much so that's how I learned Hindi, because
same girl.
That was like literally my same life. And then of course, I feel like every South Asian kid can relate to this, is that when my parents came here, they had the biggest Indian community. I don't know how they made like all these friends, but they were all Indian. And so we all grew up together. So, and my dad loved to throw parties. So we had like parties every weekend with like all the family friends that we grew up since I was like born, essentially. And we're still so close to them now, you know, 30 years later. But, you know, having them around, it felt like an extended family almost, and an Indian community. So you just grow up with like all these influences from your culture. And then of course with the Bollywood movies, and then talking the language at home, plus going to Gurdwara and all of that, that's basically what I grew up with for living with my parents for like most of my childhood. So
yeah. And I completely relate to your experience. I think being born here as a first generation South Asian, you end up using like Bollywood and music as ways to connect back to your culture.
100%.
And so that's something that I think a lot of people relate to. Is that something you've continued to do growing up now and being where you are? Are you still connected to your South Asian roots?
Yeah, now more than ever. I feel like what happened was like you grow up with your foot in two different worlds, essentially. So, you know, I grew up with all these influences. My parents, you know, were very traditional in many ways, and then many other ways they've adapted to like a new culture as well themselves. I grew up being so immersed in it. But then when I went to, you know, high school, that's when I, you know, you start rebelling and being like, it's not cool. I need to like, you know,
I need to blend in, guys.
I need to blend in Western. I'm going blonde. Although I really like my blonde.
I mean, I feel like you look great in blonde.
But, you know, you do rebel. And I just went, I wouldn't say so far away from it, because I always love Bollywood, and I always love so many parts of our culture that I could never, you know, run away from. But of course, you try to immerse yourself in a whole different world, because that's what feels cool, and that's what feels right. And, you know, it's very much a part of my culture as well, because I was born here, right? So you just try to figure out where you fit in it all. And that was kind of the journey throughout high school. And then, you know, I love my culture, but Australia, being Australian is very much a part of my culture as well, you know, because that's part of my identity, because I was brought up here. So
exactly.
And it's beautiful. It's like the more cultures, the better.
Yeah, embracing really. Those two worlds come naturally. You have to, if you're living in Australia and then you're also connected to your culture in South Asia, in India, it's so inherent for you to feel like you need to choose between the two, especially when you're growing up.
And because you hear it a lot as well, like you people go, you're not Indian enough.
Exactly.
You're so, you're so Aussie, or you're so like, you feel guilty almost, like, yeah, when you embrace it. And then you get people being like, well, you don't fit in here. And then, you know, and vice versa.
You don't fit into any other world.
Yeah,
exactly.
And then you get a little confused because you're like, well, no, but I shouldn't have to prove to anyone what my culture is because I've been brought up in it. And, you know, and there's been literally, like, I can kid you not, and it's really sad, and I hate when people do this to others. I had people, like, message me when, you know, on social media, when, like, I posted something, you know, being Punjabi.
Yeah.
And, you know, someone would message being like, oh, my God, you're a wannabe Punjabi, or like, some, you know, but it wasn't that, but that's what they were insinuating.
Mm-hmm.
And when you get messages like that, it really gets under my skin, because I'm like, you can't take away what my hereditary is, like,
yes,
you literally can't, like, that's what, yeah, that's in my DNA, like, you, yeah, know, and what I choose to pursue and what I choose to, you know, that's just through my eyes and my perception, and you, just because you perceive me from, you know, a window from far away, that you get to decide who I am. And, you know, I just don't think that's right. And it makes people feel, like, very isolated as well, because then they kind of go back to that thinking where it's like, where do I fit in?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and it's not nice.
It's always like when you take two steps forward, that ends up being one step back, where, yeah, you kind of realize, like, oh, people, like, are seeing me in a different light, but it's actually, yeah, just how I've been this entire,
that's,
time.
Exactly.
It's like nothing's changed. Nothing. It's just now I'm able to embrace that more.
Yeah, 100%.
And so I think a lot of people relate with that experience, but no one is willing to talk about it either, because they're, yeah, just kind of like still want to blend in and just be like, I'm here, I'm me, but, like, I'll do it where I'm not wearing my chumkas, or not,
yeah,
where I listen to
wear
music.
Wear your chumkas.
Yeah. Be proud.
Exactly. Be proud. Man, I couldn't, like, emphasize that enough.
And
I think that's so important.
It's been a long time coming. I think now we're starting to see, especially in the social media space, we're starting to see more people embracing that. And speaking of social media, you have quite a following, like 2 million TikTok followers, girl. And she's doing everything. She's doing the comedy sketches. She's doing her music.
Yeah.
But being on this online space, have you found it's actually helping you connect more with the South Asian community globally, or in Australia?
Yes. Oh, my gosh. It's really cool. So, like, a lot of the comedy stuff I do is, like, you know, I'll do a range from, like, well, one, I emulate these parent characters that I do, and they're not like my parents, although the dad character I play is very similar to my dad, because he's amazing, but he's hilarious. Like, he's a walking comedy show. And so there was a lot of inspiration from that. But then my mom is an angel, and she's not like a mom character. And I feel like I have to say that.
Your mom, my character, is iconic, though. She's, yeah, the epitome of an Indian auntie. I have to say that.
Yeah.
And so they're not that similar, so, in that sense.
They're not. And she's like, you have to, like, tell people this, because people think I'm like this. I'm like, I know, I'm sorry. But, you know, with any good script, you have to have a good character and a bad character.
Exactly.
I'm sorry, mom. But with those parent characters that I do, they a lot of people gravitated towards them. Mm. And it was a big, obviously, South Asian community, but not even just South Asian, like, people from around the world who, like, have, you know, they resonate with the parent characters, and they say, oh my God, that's like my mom, that's like my dad, and people share their stories in the comments. And it's really nice to see, because, like, you grow up, you know, obviously in your own world, and then all of a sudden 50,000, 100,000 people have a shared experience, and they're all commenting what that is. I love that. And I got addicted to that because, one, you know, it brought a lot of people joy, and I'm a, you know, as I said, I'm a drama kid. I love creating anything to do with acting. So that was really nice. And it was a kind of like a full circle moment for me. But also, yeah, the connecting with, you know, people from around the world, sharing that, you know, obviously a big South Asian component, but also, yeah, as I said, from all different countries, is a really nice thing to see, because then it creates a shared space, a community where people feel comfortable enough to share their stories.
If you don't have TikTok, if you're listening and you don't have TikTok, get it now. Watch her videos.
Yes.
It's so entertaining.
Shameless promo for me. Do it.
I have to also say, we have to acknowledge someone else. Jeremy has his mom as well.
I love Jeremy.
Can we ever see a collab in the future where both your mom, well, and Jeremy's mom?
Honestly, I'll call Jeremy right now, because there's a script literally sitting in my laptop right now.
Jeremy, what are you doing?
What are you doing, Jeremy? Come here, we need to film it. It's actually, it's not going to have a mom character in,
yeah,
it, but it's got the aunties.
Yes. Okay,
and
good.
Need him,
yes,
to just be available so we can film it, because it will happen.
It's so iconic. I think you guys, like, especially for me growing up here, and I think a lot of people related to this, our reference point was Lily Singh when she used to do these sketches too.
Yeah.
And like having that kind of representation was really important at that time, regardless of whether or not how crazy her content was and how funny it was and how it, you know, poked fun at those little quirks we have being South Asian. And I want to go back to, you know, your relationship with music and being in the Australian music industry. Yeah. We had that representation online, but when it came to your connection with music, we didn't really have that for mainstream Australian music growing up. And so who were your music influences when you started making music, whether it was for Mischief or where you are today? Mm. Who do you go back to and think of like, hey, they are actually who inspired me?
Okay, that's a really good question. I feel like it's very eclectic. Like there's a plethora of artists that I listen to, literally from genres as well, like to God pop, R&B, hip hop, EDM, like it's a range. And I have always resonated with R&B. And a lot of my initial music that I was writing was very R&B influenced. And I was, you know, listening to a lot of Drake, Black, Beyonce, Mariah Carey, like there's so many artists. But then also in the same sphere, as I said, I've always had an affinity towards Bollywood music. And I grew up listening to, you know, because a lot of the time the artists that are singing those songs, especially the old school Bollywood films, you had Lata Mangeshkar, you had Udit Narayan, Asha Bhosle, Mohammed Rafi, like, you know.
Iconic.
Yes. Like, you know, and so, and my dad is like, if you come to my house, it's like either him singing like 24/7 with his karaoke machine.
Oh my God.
Or it's he, like, you know, he's playing it, or he's on the piano trying to figure out, like, you know, notes to a song. And so I grew up listening to a lot of that music by those artists.
Okay.
So basically, I feel like growing up, it's been an influence of both R&B, that, and then, of course, the other genres I listen to. And it's taken me a while to kind of figure out what kind of music I want to release. I've released quite a bit, but it's been very experimental trying to figure out what it is. And I think the last 2 years, I've kind of found that space where I'm like, you know, I love writing R&B music, pop music, a lot of ballads, and so I want to continue to do that, but also in the same sphere I want to bring those two worlds that I've been listening to, which is, you know, very Hindi influenced plus, you know, the English songs that I write, and bring them two together. So I think in the next few years you'll hear a lot of songs from me with both that fusion plus, and of course, just songs that I like, English songs that I just love writing. So
yeah, and it's a bit of a mixture. Cool, because like, you know, me, I have the terrible voice. I cannot sing. But so I love listening to music, though. So when I hear fusion artists like yourself, it's kind of like my two worlds are colliding.
Yeah.
And I have found like this safe space where I'm kind of like, oh my God, there's an artist who relates to me in a way that it feels like, wow, like those two experiences of being South Asian and growing up in Australia, listening also to R&B, like those worlds are coming together. And it's so nice to hear.
That means a lot. Thank you. I'm so glad that that's the message you receive when you listen to the music. It's exactly what I wanted.
I guess like sometimes this journey doesn't always go in an upwards trajectory. There are places where, or there are points in artists' journeys where they feel like they might be a bit isolated, especially for South Asians, they're a bit isolated. There's that imposter syndrome that comes up.
I don't think imposter syndrome ever goes away.
Yeah. So like, doesn't. Did you ever feel that? Like, do you still feel that?
Oh, 100%. Because it doesn't go away. When I'm hosting, when I did radio, when I release music, whenever I'm on a panel or whatever it might be, I'm like, oh my gosh, like what am I doing here? And you feel that, but that never goes. But the reality is, and the way I came into this industry was always with this intention, is that I love creating. I'm always going to create because that's my outlet. That's like, that's kind of like my dear diary in a sense, that I can just like feel relaxed and I can feel free. And if anything comes from it, it's a bonus, because I'm going to do it regardless. So that's kind of the way I navigate myself, because it can be really like scary, daunting, difficult and overwhelming. And when you get so focused on the numbers and the validation and, you know, I'm not saying they're not important, because you have to look at that. And, you know, maybe if you want to make this a full-time career, you have to be immersed in those numbers. But in saying that, I always have to remind myself, at the end of the day, if I'm not happy with the content, it's not worth it. If I'm not happy with the song, it's not worth it. If I'm not happy with whatever, I'm not going to do it. I have to do it with the mindset that I'm creating, I love creating, I'm going to do it regardless. And if it resonates, that's great, but I love it, so that's all that that's all that matters. And if I go with that intention, because it can get isolating, I can just, you know, keep going. Because it is very overwhelming sometimes.
I mean, like, in that sense, even though, you know, many artists feel this kind of imposter syndrome, I feel like, though, any sort of music that gets released, any sort of contribution that you make still paves the way for other artists to do exactly the same thing. So it inspires other artists to be like, she's doing that.
Yeah.
So I can do that. So I think that's kind of the other side that many artists don't see. Mm-hmm. Like, when they're making that music, that tunnel vision they have to just get it out there and just, like, have that, like you said, that validation from the numbers.
100%.
But yeah, like, you're in a place where your music is doing so well. Like, I've heard your mashups. You've done Mahi Ve. You've done some other iconic classics. So what was that point that sparked you starting to embrace fusion music?
I always wanted to do it, and I always said I would, but I just didn't know where to start, if that made sense, because I didn't know, one, if I could even fuse it with, like, the kind of music and style of music I was writing. And then I remember I was listening to AP Dylan, and there was a few other artists that I saw on social media as well. Like you said, like, they can do it. And, you know, obviously AP Dylan is Punjabi music, but his beats and the production in his songs were very, they almost sounded very, I want to say, they had so many elements of Western kind of drums and kicks and all that kind of stuff. And I was like, oh my God, it's so cool. Like, that was like that kind of blew my mind.
It's amazing. Like, I've seen, like, many other Punjabi artists as well who are doing so well in that kind of, like, that balancing sphere. Those two worlds.
Yeah. There's, is it Mickey Singh?
Yes.
He does the fusion as well.
Mickey Singh was, like, a throwback. I remember listening to his music ages ago, but it was, like, so cool because he was one of the only artists back then doing that kind of stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And so I remember listening to some of his stuff and then a few other artists as well. And I thought to myself, right, well, wonder, like, because I love writing ballads. I'm such a sad kid who just is writing, like, sad songs.
What are you going through, girl?
Really nothing. I just love writing sad songs. And I was writing one that we were in Portugal, me and my husband, and I was working on this song.
Mm.
And I thought, okay, maybe this could be the song that I do the fusion with. But it was a ballad as well. And I didn't know how, like, just composition-wise and also how I could fit it in to, like, the syllable count and everything like that. So I wrote it all in English.
Okay.
And then I worked with someone from India named Neeraj. He's an amazing writer. And he worked on the Hindi with me, and we came up with this song.
Oh, okay.
And that's how it basically came to be. And he's brilliant, like, such a great writer. Because if you saw my lyrics that I wrote in Hindi, God forbid anyone sees that.
Oh my goodness. It'd be just, like, words all over the place that don't even make sense.
And it's just not poetic. Exactly. Like, you know, there's just speaking and then there's singing and very two different things, and it just wasn't poetic. And thank God for Neeraj. But yeah, with that collaboration, that song came to life. And that was the first song that I did that kind of fusion with.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it also was great for me because I could, you know, it was possible. I could do it when that song came, you know, came to life. And I was like, right, well, I love this. I'm obsessed. I want to do more. And that's kind of how it all kicked off for me.
You had to go through those different stages of, like, figuring out what this sounds like in English, figuring out what it sounds like in Hindi, and then like putting that together, seeing what that comes out to be.
100%.
So you've touched on your acting experience quite a bit, and I have to ask you, like, will we see you in an acting space anytime soon? Is that something you want to explore?
That's a really big dream of mine. There's only so much I'm comfortable to do on screen, hence why I feel like I need to open that door for myself.
Yes.
So I'm working on projects currently that I can't say too much about, but things that I'm trying to spearhead to hopefully create that opportunity for myself. But we shall see. It's long projects.
For now, we've got auntie and uncle going.
Auntie and uncle, yeah.
And I think I have to end on this note, which is a very hopeful note. And it's something that I would like to hear from you, but I think our listeners would as well. You know, what advice do you have for any artists or young artists who may be struggling at the moment trying to find their space and their moment? You know, you paved the way for so many, you know, young South Asians to do what you're doing today as well. But what advice do you have for someone who might be stuck in that space where that imposter syndrome is kind of balancing out their love for their music?
Yeah, this is the thing. you might post something and it doesn't do well. You might post a song, whatever it might be that you're passionate about, and it doesn't do well. But that one person might see it that completely makes a difference in their life. Like, it's wild. I have posted stuff that has, you know, when I first started, that I was really embarrassed about, and, you know, it didn't perform and it didn't do well. And I had friends messaging myself, like even within my community, saying, oh my God, I want to start doing this, you know? And like, it has, it's contagious. It has a domino effect, you know? So especially when you see people do what they love, it spreads, it does. I was 5 years in a girl group that didn't work out. I learned so much from that experience, like crazy amount. And I was so blessed to be in that experience, but it didn't work out 5 years. And I thought, oh my God, my music's like, music's never going to work out for me. But then 5 years after that, I continued to put out music that didn't perform. 5 years, I continued to release songs, tried everything. Like, I made every video under the sun to try and make my music be heard by people, and it did not work. 10 years accumulated of just epic fails until this year, 2024, in the last 8 months of consistency, where the video started taking off. That's just steps, accumulated effort that has led to success. Sometimes it can take a year. Sometimes it can take 10 years. Sometimes it can take 2 months. You don't know what that is, but you're one video away, or you're one piece of content away, or you're one step away from possibly changing your life. And that onus is on you to take it. It's scary. It's always scary. I'm still scared. Like, I'm scared all the time, but it is so worth it if you're pursuing what you love. Hence why I got the tattoo, trust the process, on me. Mom wasn't happy, but it's the process. That's where you learn everything you need to learn. It's not the outcome. The outcome's great when you achieve it, but the process is where all the beauty is and the greatness is. And so if you're thinking of pursuing what you love, I kid you not, and I know it sounds cliche, but just do it. Nike, you're gonna come after me. Just do it, trust me. It's so worth it.
And that was Avnisha Martins. Thank you so much for tuning in. If you liked the episode, share it with your friends. Subscribe to SBS Spice wherever you get your podcasts and never miss an update. Find and follow us on Instagram at SBS Spice for more behind-the-scenes chit-chats, explainers, and pop culture patrols. We'll be back soon with another Chill in the Pod to see what makes South Asians tick or ache.